Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for returning to the show, wherever you are in this world, and many, many thanks for all the emails. Too numerous to mention, but you know who you are, and thank you for continuing to support me and also for recommending me to your friends and contacts, which I know a lot of you are doing. Please do that. If you want to email this show, please do it. UnexplainedHH at yahoo.co.uk is the email address. That's UnexplainedHH at yahoo.co.uk. That's the email address. And please register a hit on the website. Whenever you hear this show, even if you're hearing it on iTunes or whichever way you're hearing it, please go to the website www.theunexplained.tv and register a hit. It helps us enormously. Now, on the subject of the website, I would like to thank Graham Mullins for his 3 years of really hard work on this show. He will continue to be involved with it, but we are now moving very, very soon. In fact, by the time you hear this, it might have happened already. We are moving to a new website, a new Unexplained website, with more content and more potential for future development. I'll be able to tell you more about it, what it's all about, and who's behind it on the next show. But for right now, just to say, we are in the middle of some very big changes. I know it's been a very long time coming. One of the problems, of course, being money and the recession and all the rest of it, but we are now here. And I hope is what I have, that we're on the crest of something very big with this. So I want you to monitor it. I want you to keep giving me your feedback and keep telling your friends about this show. That is the most important thing. Remember, this is an independently produced webcast. It is a way of reaching people across the world, people I don't know, in some places that I've never even been to in my life, and I've been to a lot of places. It is very thrilling and very exciting. We do it like a mainstream AM/FM radio show anywhere in the world, but we do it on this medium. And I think this is the medium of the future. I want to expand it. Anybody who knows me will be able to tell you that I'm very passionate about all the things that I do, and I'm very passionate about this concept, which I started on radio in the UK and have brought to the internet and has had such great response. Now, this time the show is truly reactive. And what I mean by that is, I know that sounds like one of those British media marketing buzzwords, but it is reactive because you've been asking for about a year for me to bring you the man I'm about to bring you. So I'm responding to your requests and bringing you Dr. Eric Pearl, internationally famous healer. He's on a tour at the moment of the world. He never seems to be off tour. We've managed to track him down, and I'm very pleased to say, let's not hang about. Let's get to him right now. Dr. Eric Pearl, thank you for coming on The Unexplained and for making time for us.
Hey, it's my pleasure to be here. It really is.
Now, Eric, I've said already that that you're a man who's always on tour. You're always in a different part of the world. Where are you now? I'm confused.
I am in beautiful Prague. I should say beautiful hot and muggy Prague, so everyone who's listening to us can identify with hot and muggy England at the moment.
Well, yeah, as we record this, England is in a heat wave situation now. If you're in North America, I can tell you that the temperature in the place where I'm recording this now is 88 degrees Fahrenheit, which I think is something like 32, 33 degrees Celsius.
For well, that's European not bad distance. Unless it's really humid.
Well, it's humid too. We're not used to it. And I know Prague, where you are at the moment, and I know that because it's Central Europe, when they get a heat wave, they get a heat wave.
Well, I just came from Serbia, where it was also very hot last weekend. And Monday, I'm flying to Israel, which will probably make Serbia and Prague feel cool.
Well, I would say it's going to be hotter than July, but it is July, so I can't say that. Now, Eric, as I say, for me, it's a great pleasure to talk with you. And one of the main reasons is that my listeners, I don't know whether you know about this show started on national radio in the UK, ended on national radio, and my listeners bombarded me with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails to continue the show. So I brought it to the internet 3 years ago. That's how we do this.
Okay.
And I now have listeners from New Zealand to San Diego, you know, and all points in between, including right across the UK. And it's growing massively in America. So I have people listening everywhere. But people in many locations in the world have been bombarding me with emails asking me to get you on. And I have to say, a year ago when these emails started, I knew nothing about you. So I've been finding out. And I have to say, had I known more, I'd have wanted to get you on too. So I'm pleased that we're here now doing this. Now, look, let me ask you this first off. It seems to me, doing the research that I have done, and I know that other hosts of shows like this always talk about the research process. Well, I'm a a journalist, I don't believe in researching anybody too deeply, because then you don't ask the obvious questions that your listener will ask. But the research I have done brings me to thinking that you feel that you've been destined to do this.
You know, it feels that way if you step back and overview the whole picture. And then, sometimes you just do what you're doing and don't think of it in that grand of a fashion. But if I look back at things, yes, everything makes perfect sense and seems to have fallen in place. Not that I would have necessarily arranged the pieces of the puzzle in exactly this way, but I guess that's because none of us truly understand the mind of God. You know?
Well, that's a fact, I think. Maybe some people would dispute that, but I'm not going to do that because I think it's a fact. I bet you meet them all the time. We'll get on to...
They're in my seminars.
Well, listen, I'll get on to the skeptics and the things that other people say in a little while. But it does seem to me that this area that you're in, as we say, you feel destined to do it. But that destiny didn't even start with you, according to your recent book. It started with your mum.
Again, I never thought of it that way. Really, until the healing started to happen. That was when I looked back to see where it might have started from, because, well, we'll start with that since you're talking about it. But yeah, I had a rather unusual birth process. My mother died giving birth to me and came back to life and spoke about it in a time when no one was speaking about it. There was not Raymond Moody, you know, or Elizabeth Kubler-Ross or the others who've done the research on life-after-death experiences. What happened was she was lying on the table, and she felt and heard loud motors or engines. I don't remember right now. She felt them turning on or turning off, but she felt them at her ankles and heard them and started moving up towards her knees and her hips, and she was looking at the others in the room, the doctor and the nurses, and wondering why none of them seemed to be responding to this very loud sound. And somehow she felt that if it got to her heart, she would die, and she didn't want to die, and she wanted it to stop, and no one seemed to be noticing it. And next thing she knew, it got to her heart, and she was leaving her body, and she was struggling not to, but suddenly she was somewhere else, and she felt herself moving up through levels of beings. The closest word that we have here for that would be souls, although she said it wasn't exactly souls. But anyway, she passed through the first two levels. She doesn't remember what that was. The third level she remembers quite clearly, because that was the one level, the only level that was uncomfortable. It was sad, and it was uncomfortable, because that was the level of the souls who had done the only thing that we can do to interfere with the overall plan, according to what was revealed to her knowledge-wise at that time, and that was these were the people who had taken their own lives. She didn't know if they were there forever or just for a long time, and that they would eventually resume their transition, but she continued to transition past that.
And so those people that she passed were in their own personal, whether it's short-term or long-term, she didn't know, hell. Kind of.
Well, you could say that, yeah. I mean, that's the way that I would view it.
But that wasn't your mother's path, so she passed
hell.
Through.
It wasn't considered hell,
sure.
But...
But it kind of felt like that, so she moved on through
some
that because that wasn't
it. Isn't there a concept that some people have called Hades or something that's not quite hell, but it's like in between?
Sure, it's like a fine gradation, but it's bad enough. But that wasn't your mum's path.
Yeah, it really is. It's bad enough.
So your mother had to transition through that and go forward. What happened
next? So she continued through that. And the next thing she knew, she was passing through flowers of colors that she had never seen before, never seen the flowers, never seen the colors. And yet they were very real, and the next thing she knew, she found herself sort of on this lane and moving or gliding down a lane, although she couldn't quite understand how, because her legs weren't moving, she wasn't walking. And she saw this very bright light toward the end of it, and she didn't want to look at the light because it was so bright that she was sure it would hurt her eyes, but she felt compelled to look, and as she did look, she found that it was very bright, but it didn't hurt her eyes at all. She found that she was drawn towards it, and as she came very close to it, suddenly It was as if her life was laid out before her. It was laid out before her, not in a way that she could see and relive every aspect of it. There wasn't any judgment on the one hand, and yet on the other hand, she knew it was a good life. She was able to experience the joy that she brought to people. She was able to experience sadness when she was involved in that. And the next thing she knew, suddenly all the secrets of the universe were being revealed to her. Why the sky was blue, why the grass was green, why the earth was round, how war is a temporary state of barbarism that we are in, that we will evolve beyond, how ridiculous it is for young men and women to go out and die fighting the battles of older men and women. And she knew everything.
Wow, we need some of that information down here now, I think,
yeah,
Eric.
Really.
Truly.
And the next thing she knew, suddenly, she was being sent back. And for all the struggling and the fighting, she did not to die in the first place. Now she didn't want to leave because it was such a wonderful place where we all come from, where we all return to. And she knew she was programmed to forget all of these insights, so she struggled as hard as she could to hold on to them. And the next thing she knew, she was being wheeled back on a gurney into her room, and everyone was looking at her, and no one would say anything. And one of the practical nurses there said to her, "Boy, was you lucky. All I can say is you was really lucky." And she knew.
But she brought back the memory of it. Could she remember why on that other side, or whatever you want to call it, why they told her or why they'd required her to come back?
She had a son to raise.
So that's where you come into it.
Apparently.
Kind of seems that way, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So her job was to make you what you are. Which I guess is every mother's job, but in your case, you're special.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how did that unfold? In other words, how did you discover, I guess is what I'm getting round to, how did you discover your gift?
Well, I was a chiropractor, and one day in my 12th year of practice, a few strange things happened. Light came bursting through my eyes and woke me up in the middle of the night. And I opened my eyes to see what it was. And it wasn't anything seemingly spiritual or metaphysical. It was just a lamp next to my bed. It had turned itself on. Now, I had had that lamp for a good 10 years, and it hadn't selected any other propitious occasion to self-ignite. but there it was just the same. And I remember thinking, well, it must be some kind of an electrical short or something, except shorts usually turn things off. So I don't know, maybe it was an electrical long, who knows. Whatever the thing was, at the same time, I clearly felt that somebody was in my home who wasn't there an hour before that when I'd gone to sleep. Now, I cannot explain what an uncomfortable feeling it is to wake up and feel that someone is in your house. Let's just say I got up with a knife, a can of pepper spray, and my Doberman pincher, and I went hunting.
So you didn't know at the time whether that was just the sense that sometimes we get that another person is there, or whether this was something else.
I don't wake up with a sense that somebody else in my house is there and go, oh, what an interesting feeling. Uh-huh. I mean, I woke up and I felt that someone was in my house. You know, I mean, to me, I guess I had two levels of awareness going on at the same time. One, on the mundane level, I thought it was a human being. One or more people were somewhere inside my house, and that's why I grabbed the knife and the pepper spray and my dog.
Self-preservation.
Yeah. Now, on some other level, in retrospect, I can see that I might have been aware or sensed that it wasn't human form, but my conscious mind wasn't thinking that way at the time. My conscious mind was going, who the hell is in my house? You know, and am I safe here? So after looking for about 20 minutes, I realized I couldn't find anyone, and I guess I sort of began to, on a more surface level, begin to recognize that what I was feeling might not have been a person, and I guess I was wondering whether I was just making it up or not. I don't think I was thinking that I was sensing someone on a non-physical plane. I mean, my brain didn't go that way at this time, so I went back to sleep. And on that Monday, when I went into my office, seven of my patients, all independent of one another, insisted that they felt someone in the adjusting room with them, just like I had felt in my home that previous night.
Wow. They said, so whatever it may have been, we are thinking went to work with you that day.
Well, apparently some people said they felt someone standing, some walking, some running. My patients actually looked me straight in the eye and said it felt as if someone was flying around the ceiling.
Gee, now, Eric, that is one, you know, there you are, you have a chiropractic practice. I've been to chiropractors, and they're very practical people in the main. You know, I once knew a chiropractor, he was an ex-naval guy. He had hands like ham hocks, and he could really work those bones. Spiritual, he was not, so this is a big leap.
It was a jump. It was definitely a jump. I wasn't raised, you know, this way with, you know, ghosts and spirits and tarot cards and turbans on my head, you know, and, you know, moon and star earrings.
That
wasn't the way I was raised. You know, I was a doctor. You know, I grew up, I went to school, I got a degree, I'm a doctor, you know, boom. So this is unusual. Now, you would think just from all this that would have been enough to have held my attention. But at the same time, other patients are saying to me, I can feel your hands before you touch me. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, sure, you can. Close your eyes. So they'd close their eyes, and I'd hold my hand maybe a meter or two away from them, a yard or two away from them, and they could tell the direction my hand was aimed in, you know, the right shoulder, left ankle. They could feel it. So it sort of became a game because, well, it was my office, and I could have whatever games I wanted. And as I played with this, my palms blistered a couple of times, and my palm actually bled once, not like a stigmata or anything along those lines, you know, more as if you just accidentally stuck it with a pin or a needle. But the next thing I know, people began having healings, real substantial healings. They were getting up out of wheelchairs and reporting and showing me results that their cancer tumors had vanished and hearing and vision was returning, and parents are calling me up and saying that their children with cerebral palsy or epilepsy are running and playing and not having seizures any longer. What did I do? And I said, nothing and don't tell anyone, which of course went over about as big as Nancy Reagan saying just say no to drugs, you know. So everyone started coming in from everywhere going, I'll have what she had. And the next thing I know, people are saying, teach this. And I said, teach it? You got to be crazy. How the heck do I teach something like this? I'm standing there waving my hands in the air looking like an idiot. Wave your hands in the air, look like an idiot. Let me know what happens. But more and more of my patients would call me when they got home from their sessions and say, you know, I walked into my house and my stereo or my air conditioner or my television started turning itself off and on and off and on, and I felt sensations in my hands, and I would hold my hands by someone in my family, and my uncle could speak again after the stroke.
So you were actually communicating that stuff to other people. Now, this all kind of reminds me of that movie, Bruce Almighty, where a guy became God. So, you know, it was a problem for him in the movie. I would guess you being a mortal chiropractor with an ordinary practice wanting to get on with his life, yes, it may feel fantastic, but I would also imagine that it would feel very scary.
You know, when I look at the whole thing the way it happened, it sounds as if it should have felt frightening. It didn't. Now, it felt awesome, and in a sense, awe could be a little bit of fear in a sort of reverence sort of way, but it was exciting, it was awesome, and at the very same time, hard as this is to believe or conceptualize, it felt perfectly natural.
So although you didn't know what you were doing, you
I
could see
forward full speed.
Sure, you could see and feel, and you were being told about the effects of it, and in your heart you didn't feel that it was wrong, but you didn't know why.
It was so exciting that there was nothing that could possibly have stopped me.
And when you experience, I mean, I've no idea what it's like to experience something like that. I've had some paranormal experiences in my life, but nothing like that. Can you bring yourself to tell other people about it? You know, you told your patients, please don't tell anybody about it initially, but what about your colleagues and the people in the office and your family and everybody else around you?
The people in my office knew you couldn't miss it because as a chiropractor, I would adjust my patients, but the doors in the rooms would stay open. So the fact is having multiple rooms with patients and multiple employees walking up and down the hallways. See, I didn't even get to the strange part of the story yet. They would see what was happening on the tables. If I would hold my hands near my patients, what would tend to happen immediately is that their eyes would begin to very rapidly dart back and forth, and tiny involuntary muscles, muscles that we could not move intentionally in our forehead, and tiny little muscles around the mouth would begin to move. Then fingers and feet would begin to move. You would see it as you're walking down the hallway. But when it became even stranger, just about 4 months into it, my patients began, it was a three-month period of time from January to the middle of April, where my patients, over 50 of them, lost consciousness and spoke six verbatim phrases. And now my other patients walking down the hallways would hear this and see this. It was...
Freaky by the sounds of
it. Yeah, that's a good word for it. That's a good word for it. Because what would happen is it would frighten some of the patients. It would frighten some of the patients who were doing it. I mean, some of my patients actually got scared and left. Some of the patients who lied there on the table spoke these, over 50 different people during these 3 months spoke six word-for-word phrases.
The same phrases?
The same phrases. None of them knew each other. Only one, only the very first one, ever had a voice come through them before. And I guess you could call it channeling, or you could call it speaking in tongues. And, of course, the people who call it speaking in tongues refuse to speak to the people who call it channeling, but that's another story. The point is, over 50 different human beings spoke the same six phrases, and none of them, except for the first one, ever had a voice come through them before, and some of them got scared and they left. I remember one time I was speaking with, are you familiar with Kevin Ryerson?
No, I know that name.
I think he was the big psychic early on for Shirley MacLaine. Mm. And I went to a presentation that he gave one time because these healings had begun, and I figured I should go, you know, listen to some of these people who are familiar with the spiritual world, because it wasn't me. And I was in a big seminar that he was giving, hundreds and hundreds of people. And I raised my hand and said, well, I've had something very weird happen. And I told him this story really quickly. And I got to the point where people were channeling and speaking these phrases. And I said, and some of my patients, and they were the ones that the words came through, got frightened and left my practice. And then a hand went up in the back of the room, and he pointed to the back. I couldn't see who it was, but I recognized the voice. A woman stood up and said, yes, I was one of them.
Well, you know, there's a coincidence for you. So, you know, there you are in that situation. You know that there's something odd going on, but you don't feel spooked about it, and clearly the person who was in that audience didn't feel spooked about it. So what happened next?
I had a couple of employees run out screaming, but...
But, you know, when that happens to you, you can't continue a chiropractic practice forever. You know that things have to change, I would imagine. You know that you can't continue on that path.
I did both for a little while. What I did was I did my chiropractic, and then it was almost as an excuse to have people to do this healing work on, to practice on. I did the chiropractic, then I would say, now close your eyes and relax. And while they had their eyes closed, I would bring my hands near them, and then their body started to move and everything else started happening. But as soon as word got out, people started coming in from all around the world. I would give my chiropractic practice away to a chiropractor, and every time I gave it to a chiropractor, they'd run it into the ground, and then I'd have to take it back and save it. And then I'd give it to another one, they'd run it in the ground, I'd take it back and I'd save it. After about four times, I finally signed it away legally to someone so I wouldn't feel compelled to come back and save it. Even then I felt a little compelled, but I knew I didn't have the right to, and that finally released me to write the book and to bring this out to the world. The book, The Reconnection, is now in, I think it's going into its 33rd language. I've taught 60,000 people approximately around the world how to do this work.
Because that is the real difference between you and others. Now, I've known healers. In fact, I've known healers who work in my own broadcasting profession. They do it privately and secretly, and nobody knows who these people are, but I think
energy
they've got
healers,
a gift.
Right?
Energy healers, yeah.
Yes.
In fact, there was one guy that I worked with. We were doing what we call an outside broadcast, a remote, I think as you call them in America. We were in Italy. And I had a fall. I had to go and interview somebody. I ran and I fell, twisted my ankle, and I thought I was going to be out of action all week. And this guy, who I worked with, did energy healing on me. And he held his hand above the affected area. And I thought, what is this? I know this person. And something happened, and I was okay for the rest of the week. I don't know what happened, but I know that happens one-to-one with people. But the difference between those people and you is that you are passing on the gift.
It's because it's a different gift. Energy healing is one part of this new level of healing that research, that science calls reconnective healing. There seems to be what they're terming a reconnective healing spectrum that takes us way beyond any form of energy healing that we've ever known before. So it's not another modality of healing. It's actually its own field or its own genre that incorporates everything we've ever known as energy healing. Here's the strange way I was introduced to this concept, because again, I didn't know much about anything. And as word got out, researchers started asking to study it. And when the first one starts saying, we think this is something that hasn't been here on the earth before, I thought, well, A, that's a pretty bold statement for anyone to make, and B, it's sort of out of what I would consider character for people of science. So I said, well, how can you say such a thing? And they said, well, it really makes perfect sense if we just understand two basic concepts. The first concept is that we're four-dimensional beings. Now, you know, Howard, when you and I went to school, we were raised being told we were three-dimensional, the basic three dimensions, height, width, and depth.
True enough.
But Einstein had been telling us since the 1950s, what science formally accepted in the year 2000, that we are four-dimensional beings. We are height, width, depth, and time. And so in quantum physics, they usually draw or illustrate this concept as a bubble. So imagine this bubble, the wall of which, the cell of which, is comprised of height, width, depth, and time components, let's say, and the interior of a bubble has been filled with energy. So just as, you know, we were always told everything was energy, and this little four-dimensional bubble represents us, our little playground in this huge multidimensional universe. But suddenly, as we know today, as we've learned, time is moving faster, not just faster in a linear fashion, the way, you know, beginning, middle, end, but time is really moving faster in all directions at once. In other words, time is opening up and expanding, which they explained means that our four-dimensional playground or bubble is opening up and expanding out into the universe, and therefore its capacity to receive here has expanded beyond energy into what has always been in the universe, so it's timeless, but has never been here on Earth before, so it is new for us, a continuum comprised of energy, light, and information, levels of light and information that had not been here prior to this. So what happens is energy healers have been accessing subsets of the energy that has been our total environment. Our total environment was energy, and then energy healers have been accessing Reiki and Jirei and Jinshin and Qigong and Alpha, Beta, Delta, Gamma and quantum this and mattress that and breathe it in and blow it out and cough it out and sneeze it out and spray it off and protect yourself and all these little fear-based subsets of energy. Natural healers have been accessing subsets of energy that may be different than energy techniques, but you know, Reiki feels different than Qigong because you access it differently and it functions differently.
So in a way, to tell me if I'm wrong with this, but the way I'm thinking of it is that it's like exploring space. We reached out first to the near planets, and eventually we'll reach out to the entire universe where there'll be more. So you're reaching out, or you're connecting, reconnecting to something that's always been there, we just weren't able to get to it before.
Right. Now, the problem is on Earth, you know, all the New Agers want everything to be old and already experienced. So they want to say, oh, it's from Atlantis or it's from Lemuria, and they remember it from a past life. But you know what? Sometimes something is just new. And Howard, isn't that nice?
Well, it is. And of course, you know, the media love things that are new. But that's very hard to explain to people, isn't it?
It is. It was hard to explain to me. And, you know, and it took a little understanding. But, you know, a really simple or an easy to understand analogy would be, let's say that everything we've had here has been blue. And we've studied blue and explored blue, and we've found subsets of blue. We found powder blue and baby blue and aqua blue and light blue and sky blue. And even today, we're still finding new aspects of blue, and everything's been blue. But suddenly, there's an expansion, and we're given a continuation into red and yellow. Now, red and yellow are certainly not better than blue. But once you have blue, red, and yellow, you have more. And not only that, but then you're also able to create lavenders and greens and oranges. And so there's something much more expansive. So in energy healing, we find that people are coming out with new books and new techniques, you know, every few months. And what they're doing is they're finding more sets of blue because their eyes have been tuned to blue. It's just that there is more now. The funny thing is, well, I'm sure you've had a lot of people on your show with discussions of the year 2012 and the expansion of time that
and
we're
the
in.
Mayan calendar and all
of
that.
Of course, and how time may have been shifting, and this opening may have began around the time of 1987 with a harmonic convergence moving in through 2012. There's an expansion that is going on here. And in this expansion, it's an opportunity for us to become more multidimensional beings, for us to step out of the consciousness of fear, lack, limitation, separation, and darkness, and into the awareness of love, prosperity, abundance, unity, oneness, light, in essence. And so we're being offered higher gifts by the universe, but the universe is very clever, and is also asking us to meet higher challenges. These gifts are rewards for meeting those challenges. So as an example, this new level of healing gives us the gift of being able to transcend our energy healing techniques. So think of that as the front of a coin. What's the back of the coin? What's the challenge? The challenge is that in order to access it, we must let go of and transcend our techniques. Or the gift is that this allows us to demystify the healing process. But the challenge is whether or not we're willing to demystify the healing process. Now, to, you know, a grounded conscious mind, we think to ourselves, who in their right mind would not want to be able to do more, to access less for other people? Who would not be willing to allow everything to become clear and transparent instead of keeping it hidden behind clouds and mystery? And you have to wonder then, the person who doesn't want to transcend and access more, who doesn't want to demystify it, what are they getting by hiding behind the mystique? Mm. And that becomes a sense of an insecurity of us not of people not wanting to be seen clearly.
So in other words, what are they afraid of? We're asking, what are they afraid of?
Right. Well, that's another way of putting it, isn't it?
Now, there's a great quote from you that I wrote down, but I think that you've just said explains it. The gift is in the transcendence. So what you're saying is your gift and the gift that you're passing on is the ability to transcend from blue to all the colors of the rainbow.
Exactly. But our ego tells us that we want to say, yes, but I'm a specialist at extracting baby blue. I extract baby blue better than anyone else does, so I'm going to treat everything with baby blue. And you know what? Sometimes you need purple.
Right. And so you're here to bring purple into the world.
Yeah, why not?
In a manner of speaking.
Why not? Let's make a spiritual fashion statement.
Now, listen, there is a great deal of talk at the moment about all people on this planet being connected in some way, whether we're psychically connected, whether we're intuitively connected, however we're connected. A lot of people now and more all the time are beginning to believe that we are connected. So if you've plugged into this thing, then it follows from that if we are all connected, as some people, many people believe, then others are beginning to discover this thing at the same time as you.
This has a very interesting delivery system. You have to interact with it. You have to interact somehow or other with another human being who's accessed it. It seems that what goes on is, again, in the spiritual world, we are being given a lesson to help us overcome our ego, which includes our sense of spiritual self-importance or self-entitlement. In other words, yes, it's here. And so what happens is so many people, you know, in the spiritual world want to turn around and say, yes, it's all God, it's all love, it's all the same. And I can just sit in a corner and ohm it in because I'm entitled to it. And the point is, yes, yes, no, and definitely not. Yes, it's all right. God, it's all love, it's all universe. No, it's not exactly all the same. Yellow and blue and red, you know, are variation. There's more. And no, we can't just ohm it in because it's here and we're entitled to it. There's a lesson. The lesson is that we have to stop trying to remain in the illusion of being separate beings and self-entitlement and actually learn to drop our ego to a level where we are willing to share and receive gifts. See, we're very good at giving. We're excellent at giving. We're very comfortable as human beings to give. We are awkward about receiving, and so we create grand excuses not to. And to try to own this in on our own would be like going to a beach resort and taking a top floor hotel room and sitting in the corner and trying to ohm in the ocean. Mm. You can ohm and ohm all day, and aside from the fact that it looks ridiculous, the ocean isn't coming.
So what people need is a facilitator or, you know, somebody who connects you to broadband internet, the cable system, whatever, and
well,
you are that
you
facilitator.
Could say that you need a facilitator. The other hand, you could just slightly twist the way we're phrasing it to be a little more clear and say the person needs to be willing to accept a facilitator. The illusion might be that one is needed. The reality might be that the gift comes from our willingness to accept it.
Right, and most of us need a helping hand to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and yeah, because we have a sense of that we should be able to have it all, that everything is ours for entitlement. But there's learning. There's lessons of learning how to deal with people one-on-one and one and share a gift. And we're not always taught that today because our teachers today are not always the same as the masters that have been around throughout time. I mean, our energy healing techniques are like training wheels on a bicycle. You put the training wheels on the bicycle, you learn how to develop your sense of balance, you learn how to master the bicycle with training wheels, and then an adult comes along and helps you take the training wheels off so that you can actually learn to master the bicycle itself. But, you know, if you're left alone as a child with a training wheels on the bicycles without an adult to remove them, after a while you start to get frustrated that you're not riding perfectly, and you go look for another set of training wheels. You go to the training wheel store, and they're happy to sell you training wheels because that's what they sell. And you come home each week with a second and a third and a fourth different set of training wheels. One makes beeping sounds, and one shoots out infrared light beams, and one makes little, you know, noises, and you're riding the bicycle with 12 sets of training wheels. The true gift of the training wheels comes only when we remove them, because that's the only way we'll master the bicycle itself.
And that's the problem, because you're dealing with people, and I know that you have imparted your knowledge, you've helped thousands of people, you say, to be part of all of this. But the difficulty is that human beings, we know this, have doubts and obstacles, and rationality comes into it, and people say, well, I'd love to believe this is true, but that's the problem, isn't it?
And they are also financially and ego invested in their time spent. I learned Reiki 1, 2, and 3, and I'm going to use it. And we're going, yes, but you see, here's an opportunity to get rid of the I from the conversation and access something far more comprehensive and allow the intelligence of the universe to say, if so much of the Reiki frequencies belong here, then they will come automatically. And if so much of something else belongs here, it will come naturally, instead of feeling the need to go I, me, 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 and regulate it according to the limitations of our conscious human educated mind. I mean, we listen to people speak about healing, and it's not our fault. It's the way we're trained. But we hear people come in and they say, I walked into the healing room and I saw that the auras were out of balance, and I saw that the purple and the green didn't work, and I saw an area of red that didn't belong, so I rebalanced the purple and the green and I removed the red, and then I found an area of density and I removed the density so the energy flowed freely again. Aren't I wonderful? And the point is that maybe the intelligence of the universe has some of these shifts going on as a part of the natural healing and rebalancing mechanism. Just like if you injure your knee, there's swelling, there's heat, there's an alteration in function, there's change in color during the healing process, there's pain. The pain is your knee picking up the body's telephone system, calling to the brain, help, help, help. And the brain sends, you know, new fluids down to wash out the damaged tissue and new nutrients down to help new tissue form. And it increases the density and the congestion in the area to limit the movement of the knee so you don't damage the joint, and you see the color changes during the healing process. And this is all the intelligence of the universe demonstrating itself through the intelligence of the human body. So when we as a healer step in and start rearranging aura colors to go to where we think that they should be, or removing areas of density to make things flow freely again, what we're saying is that maybe the color changes from the intelligence of the universe in the aura, or maybe the feeling of density over certain areas of the body and the knee, is that maybe less intelligent than what's going on within the body when the universe mediates that? Or maybe there's truly an intelligent purpose, and maybe we don't understand the mind of God, and maybe it's time for us to rise above the doing, to transcend that into a state of becoming the observer and the observed, the witness and the witnessed, the seer and the seen. And as we are willing to observe, instead, we find that a balancing system is going on that we're able to bear witness to, as if we're invited into the home of the healing process. And last I checked, when you're invited into someone's home, it is simply not appropriate to start to randomly rearrange their furniture. It is appropriate to observe the beauty and the effort that they put into it, so that we gain more from the experience. They gain more from inviting us in, and we're invited back again and again.
So that explains another quote I'd written down from you, and that is, your responsibility is to be present. In other words, you, as the person who wants to understand this and be part of it, you have to enable it yourself. You have to let it in.
You have to allow yourself to be willing to witness, to let go of the fast food of ego, I did this and I did that, to instead say, I think I would love to observe and see what there is, to be seen and to experience.
Okay, so look, you're taking this message to every country of the world. I know that you've been to most of them, and probably several times, and you'll go again. But presumably you are giving yourself, what do they call it in computers, built-in obsolescence. In other words, when your job is done, when enough people know about this, can you now retire to a condo somewhere?
You know what? I think God gives us built-in obsolescence. The fact is, there'll be a time when I'm not here any longer. If I do my job right, when I leave this planet, this work will be here for eternity. It's a new consciousness. That's a challenge for us to step into. The people who still want to stay in technique, you know, this is a challenge. It jolts them. They claimed either, you know, that it doesn't make sense or that they don't understand it. The reality is we all understand it. Some of us just wish that we didn't understand it, because it means that we have to be willing to let go of I, me, 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 and step into something else. But when we do, it's part of the transition of the planet. See, this showed up in the form of healing because I think because everyone here on the planet is really attracted to the concept of physical healings. But much, much, much more is going on with this. And my true belief about this work is that it is opening up doors way beyond what we expect and what we've been able to receive through energy healing. It's giving us conscious challenges, such as transcending the ego-based approaches that we've had. But it's also, I believe, restructuring our DNA.
Well, there's a lot of talk about changes in our DNA, and there are people who believe that aliens have been doing this to us, and it comes from various sources.
Aliens are not doing this to us. This is our natural human evolution, and this is the time for what's coming on. How does a computer work? You've got like this computer piece of hardware, and you put a software program into it, and you access information from the software program, and you access information from the internet field out there somewhere. You upgrade the software, you get better information from the computer, and better information from that internet field out there somewhere. How do our brains work? Our brains don't work the way we were taught. You know, we remember those diagrams of the brain, they circle different regions and they say learning is here and speech is here and memory is here and this is there. We now know that that is not true. We know from the work of Dr. Carl Pribram and others that the information within our brain is diffuse and that it's also non-local. We access it from what is called by science today zero-point field. And so we are constantly in tune with this field. When, you know, child stares at another child who's asleep until they wake up, they're playing with the field. When you think about a friend you didn't hear from for 3 years and the phone rings a minute later and it's them, we're accessing the field. People who are geniuses, people who are psychics, people who are healers just allow themselves to listen to the field a little more closely, more sensitively, and don't second-guess the information that comes in. So
you think the human race is moving from Windows 95 to Vista? Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Forget that. You're going way beyond that. You're just going to get a Mac.
Right.
But the point is, what if our brains are our hardware and our DNA is our software?
Right.
Then what we might well be doing with this new level of reconnection is giving ourselves a human software upgrade, which will allow us to access much better what's within the brain and to access that more multidimensional field in which we exist. And as we transition into more multidimensional human beings, one small little side benefit of this is that we heal more rapidly and more fully, more completely outside of the illusions of time and space, because as we're more aware of the universe, we're no longer inhibited by buying into the illusions. But this showed up in the form of healings because everyone's attracted to it, and not as many people might have recognized the call if we just hung out a shingle that said, come get your DNA reconnected here.
Okay, so we are making this transition, you think, the human race is heading in that direction. Presumably, then, this is a process without end. This is the process of evolution that will continue until maybe we don't even exist as physical bodies, you think?
I believe so. Okay, I will tell you that I definitely believe that. At least it's part of our process as long as we are in and existing in our physical form. For instance, I was in London in March for the release of a film called The Living Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
In that film, it had Bruce Lipton and Lynn McTaggart and Rupert Sheldrake and other wonderful people, and it was talking about the science as they're discovering it and theory behind healing. And so they interviewed me for the story, and they said, what was your most dramatic healing? And I gave the answer I always give. It's always your most recent one. So I explained what it was, and they decided to include it as the opening of the film. And so they flew out to London. They flew out to Greece to interview this 5-year-old child that I had just come in from seeing. Now, this child was brought up to me after I gave a presentation. He was carried up because he couldn't walk. If they put him on the ground with his feet on the ground, if his toes would hit the ground, his heels couldn't. He was unable to stand without holding on to people or furniture. Couldn't open his hand, couldn't speak in a way where anyone could understand him. So his mother would sort of interpret to the family what she thought he was saying. And the parents did not believe in this, but their friends carried the boy up and said, please, will you do something? So I said, I don't know what I can do, but we'll begin to work for a little bit. And a little bit was all we had, because 4 minutes into the session, they had to close the venue and we had to leave. The child got off the table. Not only could he walk, he ascended a staircase without holding on to anyone or anything. A few days later, they brought him down to show me he could stand on one leg. He could spin in a circle. He was able to open his right hand for the first time in his life. Everyone could understand what he was saying. And they flew out and they filmed him playing and swinging, you know, on the playgrounds, and interviewed the mother to talk about the healing that went on in 4 minutes. Now, this is not me being some special healer. This is not the first time this has happened when I work with someone, but the point is that once you learn how to access this new level of healing, you will not only be able to do anything and everything that I can do in the way of healing, you will be able to do anything and everything that any healer on this planet can access, as long as you are willing to let go of the techniques and to transcend them. As a matter of fact, we're going to be giving a seminar in Dublin, October 17th, 18th, which is about as close as we're going to get to you during the course of this year. We're also going to be giving a seminar in Amsterdam, November 1st.
Well, that's not too far.
And 2nd, I think. Oh, no, November 13th and 15th.
But listen, to get briefly back to the story of the 5-year-old child, which I find amazing, the interesting point about that is not only the scale of the healing here, but as we've said, the subject, the person involved in this, is the major part of the healing process. So you were able to do this for a child who wouldn't, because of the child's age, necessarily understand what was going on.
No understanding, no belief system, and he certainly wasn't reinforced by his parents because they didn't believe in it. I'll tell you just how much they didn't believe in it. After the child got up and walked down the steps from the stage, and this was a small Colosseum setting in Thessaloniki, Greece, he then walked up the entire staircase of this small Colosseum, up and down twice by himself. Of course, the mother decided to attend the seminar to learn the work. I said, why don't you bring Demetrius, that was his name, the little boy, why don't you bring Demetrius down to Athens where we're giving the seminar and share the story of his healing? And she said the strangest thing to me. She said, I don't want parents to get up false hope. Now, I didn't understand what that meant at all, but fine, she didn't want to. Now, of course, he had this big dramatic healing. The film people from The Living Matrix are going to come out and film this boy. The father says no. After a lot of talking back and forth, the father says yes. They get ready to fly out. The father says no again. They talk back and forth. The father says yes. They get ready to fly out. The father says no again. Finally, after months of delaying the film, they're just about to give up. The father finally says yes. So they fly out. They film the boy. The father will not be seen. He leaves the home before they get there, and he will not come back until it's over. He wants nothing to do with it. So fine, another 3, 4, 5, 6 months pass. We're about to have the screening in London, and I thought it would be very nice. I should at least invite the family to come out, and I'll pay for their flights. I'm sure the mother and Demetrius will come out. I'm sure the father won't. Well, the three of them decided to come out. So here I am, about to meet the father for the first time after this, right before the screening. I go over, I say, hello, I'm nice. The father is sitting down, he has me sit down, he looks at me, and he said, I did not want Demetrius to be in this film. And quietly, in my own mind, I'm thinking, yeah, well, that's a big surprise, right? But he went on, he said, the reason I didn't want him to be in this film was because I didn't want to believe that he had the healing. I'm thinking, that's really odd.
Right, so this was about the father.
He said because if he accepted that Demetrius had the healing, then he would have to live with the fear that it might leave. He would have to go through the same pain of discovering that he did what he discovered the first time when he found out that Demetrius had cerebral palsy.
So he was afraid of waking up from the dream.
Uh-huh. Right. And so he looked at me and then he said, but you know what? Demetrius walks beautifully now. It's been a year, and I know that the healing is real. He said he still runs a little funny, but that's because he's only 5 years old, and he didn't get to run when all of his friends were running. And suddenly, I realized through listening to this whole story and his fear of losing it, why he didn't want to accept the healing. I knew what the mother meant when she said, I didn't want parents to get up false hope. Sometimes we want something so much that we're afraid to see it when it actually arrives.
Wow.
Sometimes, as energy healers, we've wanted it so much that we've gone through such a deal of shaking off negative energy and protecting ourselves and moving clockwise because we're afraid to move counterclockwise and all of the garbage, and I do mean that word garbage, that we've been doing in energy healing to try to get something. We want it so badly that sometimes we're afraid to open our eyes and say, oh my God, it's here with the truth, beauty, and simplicity of God, love, and the universe, and all I have to do is let go.
That is an amazing story, and that is the, it seems to me at the moment, that is the crux of everything that you have to be about, isn't it? It is,
absolutely.
It's an acceptance. That's the word. It's not exactly the process itself, because you've known that for a while, but it's now encouraging people to accept. Now, there's a word that you've used, and our time is short now, Eric, and I have to say again that I'm really grateful for you making time for us to do this. You've used the word God at least half a dozen times in our conversation.
I've said God, love, or the universe.
Right, okay, but you said God.
Yes.
Are you a religious man? You come at this from a religious perspective?
No, I'm not, but I believe in God, and I like to use that word. But I also recognize that the God word invites some people, and it frightens others, and it doesn't matter what we call it. So call it God, call it love, call it the universe, call it Helen. Who the hell cares? I mean, the fact is, a rose doesn't care if you call it a tulip, and only human beings care what you call the intelligence of the universe. But something causes trees to grow up and tree roots to grow down and children to be born with two eyes and one nose. And call it whatever you want. Call it Margaret Thatcher, you know? Call it whatever you want.
No,
the
you
fact
know,
is, there it is.
I totally agree with you, and that's where I come to this from, because I call it God only because I'm a human being, and at the moment, I don't have another word or concept
word
or phrase
for now that I can think of.
And it's a nice three-letter word, and it seems to fit.
Right. But the reality is, if there's anything that we want people to get, is that there is a new level of healing. It's new, it's different, it's very, very real, it's absolutely easily accessible, it's recognized by science, it is recognized also by the master healers and grand healers of the healing techniques, who recognize that the techniques themselves are our limitation. And for us to wake up and recognize that the true gift, just as the masters have always taught us, of any technique comes only in its transcendence. And by the end of one weekend, you can learn to transcend, and you can learn to access a level of healing beyond anything anyone has ever been able to do up until now. Then that is the gift that we get to bring either to our families or to our entire community, and it is a new healthcare profession. Welcome to it.
There will be doctors listening to this, I am sure. Just as
listen, I've trained over 12,000 medical doctors so far around the world. This is already in hospitals. It's already being done in private practices.
Well, Eric, that's an interesting thing, because I'll tell you that my doctor, who I've had as a doctor for this last 19 years that I've lived in London, and I think he's a great guy, and I always believed that he was a great medical doctor. He is now semi-retiring. What's he going to do? He's going to spend a lot of the rest of his time working in fields like yours. So there's more to this, and it seems to me that the orthodox medical profession, whatever that is tuning in more and more to alternatives.
A lot of us entered into the healing profession because we wanted to bring about healing, and somewhere along the line, the orthodox teaching structure had made us lose the purity of our original intent and gave us dogma. And many of us, when we let go and relax, are beginning to rediscover who we were, the part that really brought us into it. The fact is I think most of the healing arts we've entered into as an excuse to become the healers that we are in a way that the public can accept so we can accept it. I mean, if you really look back at the old family doctor, the healing didn't begin when you swallowed the pill. The healing began when the doctor looked at you, gave you a little smile and a wink, and told you you're going to be all right.
Isn't that true? One last question to ask you, and forgive me if you think I'm being tabloid here. That is not my intention, but the world has been rocked, as I was rocked some nights back when I heard the news, and we're recording this just a week or so after this happened, the death of Michael Jackson. Do you believe that you're based in California, that you could have helped Michael Jackson, and if so, how?
That's a question I couldn't really ask because from everything, I couldn't really answer because from everything that I've heard and understood, I mean, you would really have to be quite there on an inner circle with him, and he didn't seem to be, from what I've known, very receptive to something like that. I don't view things that way. The point is, what we've discovered with reconnective healing is that once you learn how to do it, you will find that there's nothing that this cannot work with. But the point is, it is not the health challenge that has the healing. It is the person.
Right.
So three people can present to you with the very same set of symptoms, the very same diagnosis, and receive three different sets of results according to what's most appropriate for them on their life course at that point in time. And we don't understand that. Some of us need our illnesses to give love. Some of us to get love. Sometimes we might take on a problem for our own lessons. Sometimes it might look like, oh, gee, what a horrible problem that Michael Jackson had, or what terrible suffering Marilyn Monroe went through, or something else like that. Yet on the other hand, they may well have been the angels who came down on earth and before they got here said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make myself so well known.
Okay, no, I understand.
So then
I will
go through this experience. So then I will come to this
sure.
end. So then everyone will be able to learn from what I've gone through.
I understand. This is an important point. So what you're saying, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, is that this is part of that person, any person's life path. Now, if you say that an illness or a problem or whatever it might be is part of your life story, your life path, your learning experience, doesn't that mean that there are some illnesses that cannot and should not be cured?
No, not necessarily. Well, not necessarily, because the point is that they're there until they no longer serve a purpose. Are they there for our learning? Are they there for someone else's learning? But you see, if you're trying to force a healing on someone, you know, I'm going to do this until I get rid of that problem for you, then maybe that's an interference. But, you know, you can't inflict a true level of healing at something of this high as reconnective healing. It's an offering. So if the person receives a healing, it's not a symptom change. It's about bringing them into a state of balance. And balance means physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. So the healing will only occur if it's appropriate. And if it's appropriate that the lesson be learned before the healing is accepted, then the universe has figured this part of the process out.
That is the most important thing of all, it seems to me, and that's a good place to end this, or should we say park it or rest it for now, because I think we'll talk again.
I think we should too, because we're having too much fun to just do this one.
I think so. Now, the one thing, I am fascinated by everything that you said, but I'm also frustrated because I think we should have spoken for 3 hours, and this format doesn't allow it for right now, but I'd like to do this again. Eric, many, many thanks. This has answered so many requests from my listeners to get you on, so I'm pleased we were able to do it. If people hearing you and this for the first time, who didn't know about you before, want to know more about you, is there a website they can initially find out?
The website is the same as the book title. The book is called The Reconnection, Heal Others, Heal Yourself. The website is thereconnection.com. It's international. There are many different languages you can click on to find out about it. There's a directory so you can find practitioners near you, and there's a schedule of seminars so you can learn how to access this level of healing, to bring healing to others, and to bring healing to yourself.
Listen, Eric, there are many, many guests that I've talked to over the years on subjects like this. Some of them you have to, it's almost like some kind of shellfish. You have to use a little pin and winkle out the meat, the detail from them. You don't have to do that with you. You put such a clear case, but as I say, we need to talk more. And I wish you well with your current tour and your trip to Dublin and Amsterdam and the other things that you're doing. And I do hope that we talk again. Dr. Eric Pearl, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
The book is called The Reconnection, Fascinating Food for Thought. You may not agree with all of it, but he makes a very good case, I think. And the man is constantly on global tour, which must be challenging and interesting and a lot of fun, I would have thought. Now, thank you for being part of The Unexplained. As I say, if you want to email this show, please do. It would be nice to know that you're there and listening, and tell me what you think of the show. Give me suggestions for it, by all means. Tell me how you think I'm doing. That's fine. It's theunexplained.tv. That's the website. You can email me direct if you want to at unexplainedhh@yahoo.co.uk. That's unexplainedhh@yahoo.co.uk. www.radiohit.co.uk. And please, when you're listening to this show, do remember to register a hit on that website, which is, as I've said, www.theunexplained.tv. Thank you to Graham Mullins for his work on this show. Thank you to Martin for the theme tune. And thank you for you being there across the world, wherever you are. In most cases, we haven't met, but I'm tremendously grateful to you for supporting me and this show. I believe in it. I know you do too. And I will see you soon here on The Unexplained. Go well, take care. My name is Howard Hughes.